I think the ambassador pretty much said most of what covered all the points that we were going to cover, but nevertheless, I'll try to elaborate slightly on some of the points, starting with the French initiative. As the ambassador said, the French initiative basically forced the Maronite patriarch, for the lack, as sort of a neutral national reference point, to draft a list of names of potential candidates, so that, and this is what the initial initiative was, so that these names could be discussed, and then if no consensus can be reached on one single candidate, then two or three names that are acceptable to both parties would then be taken to Parliament, and the Parliament would vote, as is usually the case in the democratic process. Unfortunately, the French in this initiative basically gave a perfect example of, number one, how not to do diplomacy, and number two, how what diplomacy with Syria always ends up being a complete failure. And so what happened in this case was that the negotiation process started between Saad Hariri and the parliament speaker, Nabih Berri, over essentially three names, because the first three names were basically the official candidates of both sides. So chances were that they were both going to be rejected, and essentially they were. You know, maybe March 14 didn't put up enough of a fight for its own candidates. Nevertheless, it was proposed that one candidate who has placed himself in the middle, Robert Ghanim, who's sort of a relatively weak Christian from the Bekaa area, and apparently Nabih Berri first accepted and gave Hariri a green light on Ghanim. Saad Hariri then went to March 14, according to reports, and convinced his allies in March 14 to support Ghanim. And then he went back to find out that Berri has changed his mind. And it was very clear in this case that this was basically the very typical Syrian way of jacking up its price, to keep the option of the vacuum available and the threat of the vacuum available so that it can milk more concessions, essentially. And the French, this is again an example of how not to do diplomacy, instead of standing by their own initiative as it first started and holding the Syrians responsible, had already invested too much of their own prestige in the initiative to admit failure. And so instead, Nicolas Sarkozy, the president, actually ended up phoning Bashar al-Assad personally. So he invested his own personal prestige in this issue, only to be snubbed and completely embarrassed. Again, though, There has never been a clear flip side as to what the consequences of such Syrian behavior would be. And the French so far have refrained from actually taking extra steps. And the United States hasn't yet, although from what I hear from Ambassador Feltman, that this is on the administration's mind and hopefully they'll pursue it, that you should take that experience and then try to sort of mobilize it in the opposite direction to initiate some sort of response from the Syrians. Syria, however, the reason why Syria did not give anything to the French, obviously, aside from trying to get as much possible out of it without having to give anything, was that Syria's real objective in this instance is not the French. Because the French, I mean, everything that the French had offered the Syrians in this time, normalization with Europe, progress maybe on the association agreement, and so on, had already been offered to Syria numerous times and rejected. So there was nothing new in the French offer. What the Syrians had their eyes on is the United States, because the United States if Syria can force concessions out of the United States, then it pulls the rug from underneath the Europeans and the Saudis, who can then balance that leverage. And this is where all the Annapolis dilemma comes in. I'm not going to dwell too much because I know David is going to discuss this. But the pressure from the Arab states was on the administration to include Syria, but it shouldn't be taken, contrary to Syrian some attempts at Syrian by the Syrians at spin. This was not really a victory for Syria. First of all, the as Stephen Hadley put it the other day, I mean, this the Golan was not on the agenda. It wasn't officially on the agenda. It was orally on the agenda, and there was an issue, a segment about the comprehensive peace. So it was basically a middle ground solution whereby the administration doesn't commit to anything, but it's enough to get the Syrians to come. And make no mistake, the Syrians are dying. We're dying to come. So it's not like we had to. They were just trying to jack up their price as much as possible. And it was said that the King Abdullah of Jordan, his visit to Syria, actually may have carried with it a much sort of sterner message than first thought. Syria is hosting the Arab League summit in March, I think. If the Arabs boycott it, it would be a great embarrassment for Syria. Syria's isolation in the Arab framework would be acute. And so it was said that the Jordanian king basically told Assad what was essentially that this is your last chance. You are going to come, and on that basis, everything else will be judged. Assad had really no choice in this case. I mean, but to come. I mean, not coming would have been the price of not coming would have been prohibitive. First of all, it would have placed him squarely in the Iranian camp, which is something that, although he's a strategic ally for 30 years, and a lot of people who want to wedge Syria or pry Syria Iran sort of forget that. He coordinated with the Iranians. He sent Walid Muallim to Tehran. So this is all this, about Iranian, anger at Syria for participating or whatever is slightly overstated, to say the least, in that it was a coordinated position. But the question is now whether how Syria views this and how the U.S. ends up viewing this this situation. Already the opposition papers in Lebanon aren't very pleased. I mean, they are calling the Annapolis conference a trap for Syria, and in many ways it is, because Syria did not get what it wanted 100% from the United States. It's not going to get a negotiation process with the United States. So as such, it will appear here, but it will not get its principal goal, which is to snag a deal with the United States. This whole balance was reflected in the level of the delegation that they ended up saying sort of one of their more rabid functionaries was sent, and sort of a low level, less than ministerial level, and so it's unclear how Syria actually views this situation, and it's stuck in a place whereby the Arabs are putting pressure on them from one direction, the French having been snubbed. Have every, at least theoretically, every incentive to put the screws on, and so does the United States should it take the initiative on this. So that aspect of what Syria wants to get out of this is still remains to be seen, and will probably be seen in the days after Annapolis and what they try to do in Lebanon to in terms of security disruptions or assassinations or whatever. Although, again, because of the pressures, that the price of that might have been might become a bit more a bit higher. I will also say that the division on the opposition side is not just with regards to Syria's attendance at Annapolis, but also with regards to what had happened with Emil Lahoud, the president, the Syrian appointed president, who ex-president now. Everybody was, fearful that somehow Lahoud would do something before he goes that would create chaos or some sort of a dual government or so on, and he basically ended up going out with a fizzle. The Syrians are, some of their outlets are trying to sell this as some sort of a concession, which is, as usual with what Syrian concessions are, it's essentially selling snake oil, because it wasn't clear to begin with that there was any other credible option. I mean, Michel Suleiman, the army commander, who has aspirations to, great ambitions to become president, and may in fact be the one that the Syrians would be most comfortable with in the presidency, does not want to basically destroy his credibility and his standing. So long before Emil Lahoud's departure, it was clear that Suleiman was not going to head either a transitional government or a military government anything of that kind. It was very clear also ahead of the departure of Lahoud that everybody within the opposition was throwing the ball into the other's lap. And this sort of played out after Lahoud's departure, because the opposition was livid as to because of the way Lahoud went out with nothing. because it puts them in a, as what the ambassador said, it gave March 14 a half victory in that Lahoud is gone, but Sanjura is still there, and the Sanjura government is still there. And so Syria did not manage to impose its own candidate, and the Sanjura government, and March 14 did not abandon the 50 plus one option. So on a certain level, March 14 retains a certain leverage, albeit tenuous. The opposition's reaction to this has been essentially two, three articles bashing Lahoud's for his decision to leave without any measure. Hezbollah is said to have been livid with this because it, you know, Hezbollah has led a year-long campaign to oust Sanjura, and now Lahoud is gone, but Sanjura is still here. Michel Aoun is completely, as the ambassador also said, is incensed because now you have, and he's trying to jack up the most crude sort of sectarian demagogy on this issue by saying, okay, look, now there's a Sunni who's taken over the prerogatives of the Christians in Lebanon, and he wants to now host a set of meeting to establish with Christian forces in order to establish himself as some sort of a Christian reference point, and the best he could do is to get some washed up rock star to come up and endorse him. I mean, and other sort of people from the Syrian era, Yaqub Sarraf and Eli Fersli and others, sort of other minor figures. So the danger, however, exists with the prolongation of this vacuum is that sort of sectarian tensions might increase as a result, and then also Syria would still have the ability to use the security disruption card in the case of a vacuum in order to also push for a candidate of its choosing. But whether it will succeed or not, should it decide to do so, depends largely on how, again, what I started by saying, the flip side of the diplomatic initiatives, be it on the French side, the Arab side, or the American side. Finally, there's just one more issue of the Iranian factor in all of this, and the Iranians are in an interesting situation because with regard to the French, they weren't very happy with the French because the French weren't really consulting with them on the Lebanese issue. And the French were trying to separate the nuclear issue from the Lebanese issue. And Ahmadinejad basically said that this is nonsense. And the deputy minister of foreign affairs told the French newspaper, Le Monde, basically, and issued a very clear threat to both the UNIFIL troops as well as to as the prospect of civil war in Lebanon. Up to this point, it was thought that it was the Iranians who were against such an option because it would undermine Hezbollah's credibility by instigating Sunni-Shiite tensions. But the fact that they put out that sort of threat of violence is probably an indication as to their dissatisfaction with not being consulted. They did not receive Jean-Claude Cousteau in Tehran, the French envoy, and they wanted a higher delegation because Syria was getting phone calls from Sarkozy, and Tehran is not going to get Jean-Claude Cousteau. So there have been threats from the Iranians. They've expressed their dissatisfaction with Annapolis and with Syrian participation at Annapolis, but I don't see this has more than, number one, role play, and it gives the Syrians the ability to fudge responsibility for who would be able to disrupt things later on should things not go their way. And on the other hand, it's also a reminder for the Syrians, for all those with the let's drive a wedge between Syria and Iran theory, that Iran has leverage over Syria in this issue, especially and even in Lebanon with Hezbollah. After all, people forget that politically, the Syrians inside Lebanon, their ultimate and first and foremost ally and the one with any credible force to do anything on the ground is Hezbollah. So the whole notion of somehow Hezbollah and the Assad regime coming to a head strikes me as a bit improbable because Syria would then lose pretty much its only available means of influence inside the Lebanese system, and they already lost one with the departure of Emil Lahoud. So the Iranian-Syrian dynamic also will play out, and we'll have to see how that plays out, and if it plays out violently or not in Lebanon, for both of them to be sending messages to each other and to the international community And so basically there's a whole lot to wait and see in Lebanon right now.